Hello and welcome to Market Movers. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me at the helm is Yohai Elam. Hi Yohai, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Lior?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Just recuperating from the World Cup finals. Have you seen it?
Of course I have. I didn't see the match for the third place. It seemed like a loser's match.
Yeah, you don't want to see
the final.
That.
Yeah.
for the next year or so. Yeah.
Right. I think we all have some kind of fatigue from the World Cup. And luckily, markets are supplying some excitement.
So let's kick it off by Yohai. You want to tell us a little bit more about how to trade what you see?
Of course, as traders, we have emotions. Actually, as human beings, we have emotions. And we always preach to trade on logic and not on emotions. Why is that? Because emotions can lead to losses. You can make irrational decisions, and these can lead to losses. Or if we are successful with our emotional decisions and they lead to wins, it creates some kind of euphoria, and that could lead to overconfidence and losses. So controlling your emotions or separating your emotions from your actions is easier said than done, of course, but we'll try to talk about what we can do. So first of all, let's start with what we shouldn't do. We shouldn't try to outsmart the market, especially in Forex. It's just too big. If we do see some opportunity, we should verify it before making a move.
Now, what do you mean when you're saying that we shouldn't outsmart the market? I mean, after all we're here for, if you're trading in Forex, is you're trying also to make a little bit of profit and try to outwit or do something that other people don't do, and try to, in order to make a little bit of a profit out of it, no? So how does that compensate with the suggestion that you just presented?
Of course, we're here to make profit, and this means to win over, to ride on market moves and not to lose on them. But some traders, this happened to me as well, tend to get overconfident. They have a feeling that they can win the market, or take revenge on it when they lose.
Oh, okay, I get it. So it's more about being humble and trying to figure it out and try to make more calculated decisions and not just go on a whim and say, oh yeah, I'm going to beat these guys. And it's more about making more calculated decisions and
right.
And taking your pace and being humble when it comes to the markets, because as we all know, it could be just one swift turn and that's it. You're out of the game so quickly and without even noticing it.
Yeah, especially with leverage. So most traders tend to see patterns on the charts, and this is great because our minds analyze quickly what we see, and we can see a technical pattern and then we can trade on it. But sometimes we're too eager to make a trade and we're seeing patterns which aren't there. So first tip is only act when you're absolutely certain. So if you see a pattern with your eyes, make sure it really exists, and only act when you see it and not when you just feel it. So that's a bit general. Now, what can we do in practice? We should have a checklist. Just a list of questions we ask ourselves before making a trade. Questions such as, what is the goal of the trade? Does it comply with my strategy? Where is the opportunity? Where is the risk? And more questions. Now, it's important not just to make the list, but also to use it, of course. And not just to take a brief look at the list and say, okay, this seems right. But to actually go step by step with a lot of patience. Sometimes it's hard when there's action in the markets and we have a feeling that it's right. So no shortcuts. Just go over your list each time, item by item, before making a trade. And if you check all the boxes, tick all the boxes in your checklist, then you're ready to go. Now, it's important to remember, using a checklist doesn't guarantee us against losses. Losing is part of the game. The idea is eventually to make more money than we lose. And it's always important before entering a trade to plan also the exit in the exact same way we plan the entry. And it's important from time to time also to re-examine our strategy in order to see if it still works, if market conditions have changed, maybe the system isn't so good. But not to overanalyze, not to re-examine our trading strategy every day or after every trade. If you took your time to find a strategy, let it go for some time and don't overanalyze, because that can be the other extreme of overanalyzing.
I think you're spot on when it's regard to putting a price and a target and sticking to it, because even though I know less about it in Forex and more about it in either commodities or in equities, and in equities you can also put a stop and put the price that you say, okay, this company I think is valued at $30 per share. And then if it's valued, if it currently values by the market at 25, then you say, okay, I like it at 25. If it goes down to 23, I like it also in 23. So I'll go even in. And to be confident in your tools in by saying, oh, this is the value I think, or this is the number or the target price that I think the euro dollar is supposed to set in, or other currency pairs, and just sticking to it. So that's very interesting. And even though I will say that I'm not a big supporter of pattern recognition, more into fundamentals, I will say, but the sound advice that you just gave about putting a target and re-examining your tools and sticking to it is something that applicable for all financial trading and investing.
Yeah, just common sense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So moving right along, let's sharply move to oil. So as you well know, the price of oil came down after reaching over $105 the WTI and $113 by the end of last month. It came down by 4% for WTI and 5.8% for Brent oil. So now currently they are trading pretty close to one another. WTI was last traded last night by at $101.20, and Brent oil at $105.85. So the gap, for one thing, shrunk between Brent oil and WTI.
And what does that tell us? What is the spread now?
The spread now is $4.65. It was trading around $7, $8 at the end of last month. So we're seeing that the two prices are getting closer a little bit, which is something that suggests the markets, the European, because Brent is a Norwegian oil, but is mostly traded also in throughout Europe and parts of the Asia. And that's the main benchmark. And for the US is, of course, the WTI. It suggests that these two markets are getting a little bit closer to one another in terms of the trading spread and in regards to how the US market is trading compared to the European market. And specifically, on the one hand, the big commotion over what will happen in Iraq hasn't turned out to be something that had an impact on Iraq's oil production, or for the matter of fact, OPEC's oil production. According to last OPEC report, as of June, OPEC's production reached 29.7 million barrels per day, which is right in line the quota, and Iraq's oil production only contracted by 5%.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. So we haven't seen any big reaction from any adverse impact on oil production, mainly because Iraq's most of oil, the oil supplies are at the south, where there is roughly 2.5 million barrels per day out of the 3.3 million oils per day that Iraq supplies. So most of it is at the south, where ISIS hasn't penetrated yet.
Yeah, those are the Shiite regions, right?
Yes, exactly. So ISIS is mostly concentrated in the north and central Iraq, but the oil most of the oil production is at the south. So there hasn't been any impact on Iraq's oil production. Translates to a Brent oil coming more down than WTI, and thus starting to reach the gap between these two prices. So that's for one thing. We see that OPEC hasn't had a sharp decline in its production. On the other hand, in the US, oil supplies keep rising, and the EIA estimates that oil production will rise by 15% during this year, which is roughly the current pace which the oil production is at, roughly 15% compared to last year. So we see that in the U.S., stockpiles are keep rising, mainly because of the higher oil production. But the final nail in the coffin of that will bring down oil prices even further is that the demand. We just talked about supply and stockpiles, but we also have to put in this equation the demand. And the demand, according to the EIA, they estimate that the U.S. oil consumption will fall this year compared to last year. And the IEA, I'm sorry about all these initialisms, the IEA stands for International Energy Agency. They project that the global oil consumption will rise at a slower pace than they initially estimated because of a, quote, a weaker than expected mid-year economic data.
That goes in line with a reduced growth forecast published by the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, recently. So we see the IEA, was it?
And yes, the IMF. International, yes.
Yeah, in line, in sync.
Yeah, we have such a mix of initialisms that we're going to go bangbusters with all these kind of initialisms, yeah. So if we put this picture together, so on the one hand, we see that the demand isn't picking up as fast as previously estimated. The stockpiles, at least in the U.S., continue to accumulate on mainly on higher production. And on the global scale, we see also that OPEC's oil supply remains stable, and the threat of a sharp decline in Iraq's oil output hasn't come to fruition, at least until now. So for now, we see that the oil markets in throughout the world are starting to loosen up a little bit, so we could see a further decline of the oil prices to the mid-90s if there won't be another a war in the Middle East, and let's not put Israel and the Palestinians right into the mix, because that region doesn't have oil, so we don't have that to worry about the least.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't flare up the whole region.
Yes, exactly.
Markets can ignore it, yeah.
Yeah, so at least the oil market won't have any implications from it, so we should see oil prices coming further down. At least that's my take of the market.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if such a thing will develop, and if so, we could see oil prices coming down by another $5-6. So that'll
maybe
loosen
an opportunity there.
Yeah, so there may be an opportunity. Again, this is my my take on it. So take it, of course, in a grain of salt. But this is the trend that has been developing the past couple of weeks. So we should see, again, oil prices slowly coming down. Now that we've covered a little bit of oil, let's turn to what we had this week in the financial markets regarding to Yellen's testimony, which was the big event of the week. And What does it say about the Federal Reserve's economic outlook and the policy looking ahead? And we have also the FOMC's meeting in a couple of weeks from now, so we also have to deal with that. Let's kick it off. Yuhai, what's your take about it?
Yeah, well, Fed Chair Janet Yellen met politicians in Washington for two very long and I would say somewhat annoying sessions. She was grilled by some of them. And she did her best, and I think she succeeded in not saying anything we haven't heard before. That means the main message is the economy is improving, but we're looking at a wide range of figures before changing policy, before raising rates. So she managed to speak for some 6 hours in total, but say nothing. However, at the same time that she began testifying and at the same time her prepared statement was released, the Fed also released another paper, Monetary Outlook, in which there was a mention, a surprising mention, I would say, of the stock market. The Fed said that in some small firms, especially biotech and social media, it singled out these two sectors, valuations may be stretched. So actually we have the Fed warning here of some kind of bubble or maybe very, very small bubbles in specific sectors. And these bubbles are, of course, a result of speculation, but also, the Fed will never admit it, but a result of the quantitative easing policy. The Federal Reserve is buying bonds and this money crowding out other investors. And this money eventually goes into oil that we've spoken about before and also into stocks. We're seeing the S&P close to 2,000 points. It seems that the only way is up. Its volatility is low, confidence is high, and the direction is up.
So what you're saying is that on the one hand, because of Yellen's and the Federal Reserve for that matter, because it was even before Yellen's time and Bernanke's time, so the Fed has lowered the long-term interest rates through its quantitative easing and thus crowded out and made more appealing. And that was, I think that was part of their plan, no? To drive private money into more risky assets in a way, such as equities and commodities, in order to jumpstart the economy.
Right.
So that was her plan, but you say that it could backfire because it might have also created a bubble. That's according to Yellen's recent report.
Right. So the hawkish members of the Federal Reserve and critics of the QE program always said that this could cause inflation, which we haven't seen, and it could cause new bubbles. The official goal of QE was to make long-term interest rates lower, thus encourage lending and encourage economic activity. But the Fed also admitted that it wants to create a so-called wealth effect. If people see their house prices rise and their stock portfolio rise, they will be more confident. Now the Fed might be, even the doves, might be getting close to a point where they begin to backtrack. And I see this as a hint, as the first very, very small baby step that the Fed is beginning to prepare us for rate hikes. Now, the Fed, as we've talked about before the show, says that it will raise interest rates only a considerable time after QE ends.
Yeah, this phrase is so, so on the one hand, when I first read it, I said, oh, yeah, so considerable time. What is considerable time? For me, considerable time could be a year, could be 2 years, but it's not, right? That's, according to Yellen, it was, as you said, supposed to be 6 months or so, right? That's what she said initially.
That was her first appearance as Fed chair back in March. She just gave a direct answer to a direct question by a reporter.
Oh, such a rookie move.
Yeah, yeah.
So telling a direct answer to a direct question? Come on. Yeah. She should have been to Bernanke's school of press, of how to make a real press conference by saying nothing and saying a lot of words, though.
Yeah, that Fed speak. Yeah, Greenspan the Fed speak. Was the master.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Right. So I think Yellen has been coached since. And apparently she has improved, remaining calm and continuing to say basically nothing when asked questions. In any case, the main message of the Fed is it's all data dependent. So we know from the recent FOMC meeting minutes that QE will end in October, barring any huge surprise on the upside or downside. And then the speculation will rise towards when will rates rise? When will more tightening come to light? We should focus on the Fed's two mandates, jobs and inflation. And in jobs, we have, of course, the weekly jobless claims, which is just above 300,000. That's the minor thing. JOLTS, job openings, which is important to the Federal Reserve. Bernanke and Yellen both mentioned it. And it has been on the rise. It reached pre-crisis levels of 4.6 million. But, of course, the non-farm payrolls remains the king of foreign exchange. It has been excellent. The first 6 months of the year were the best such first 6 months since Clinton's era in 1998. So these are all positive signs. On the other hand, the second mandate of the Fed is inflation. And here, things are a bit more complicated. So core inflation and headline inflation are around 2%, which is the target, and they've been moving up. So this may imply more action, more a rate hike from the Fed. But the Fed looks at its own, its favorite figure called the core PCE price index.
Oh, yeah, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's, it is a complicated thing. It basically singles out items which consumers actually buy, and it excludes volatile items. So this has also been moving up, rising from the bottom of around 1% to reach 1.5%.
So it's still a little bit below the target of 2% for now.
Exactly, and it's also moving slowly.
Yeah, because it's less volatile, so obviously we're going to see it progressing a little bit slower.
Yeah, inflation is going to be prominent. So it's not only the core PCE price index that we're going to talk about, of course, again and again. It's also the average hourly earnings. So United States is seeing job growth. That's great. But these jobs aren't paying so much. So the actual earnings, the actual salaries, the paychecks are significantly lower than they were before the crisis. So people are earning less, consuming less, and inflationary pressures are lower. So this figure, the average hourly earnings, we've seen it this week in the UK, how it had a stronger impact than the actual unemployment rate. We've seen a drop in the unemployment rate in the UK, but only a very small rise in the earnings rate, and the pound reacted negatively to that. So I think the same will happen in the US, where the non-farm payrolls reports will begin to be seen also from the angle of the average hourly earnings. It'll come from the back burner to the front burner.
Interesting. So looking forward, we have the Federal Reserve's meeting at the end of July. So we should see another tapering of QE3 as scheduled, unless there will be any surprises. That for now,
there's little room for surprise.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of surprise, that we don't know about it. But yeah, of course,
the it's unknown very, unknowns.
Exactly. There we go. Yeah. So, but barring any surprises, we should be steady on course. So the markets will probably react not too much to this news. But in this meeting, there's also no economic data release or a press conference. So that even reduces a little bit more the impact it could have on the financial markets. It could be another stepping stone to see that the Fed continues with its program right on track and tapering again. And at the same time, we'll still have to see and wait until the Fed will give a little bit more meat on that bone in regards to where the Fed's policy is moving forward, specifically the rate hike that could have some significant impact on the commodities, forex, and equities all across the board. So that's another factor to consider.
Yeah, we'll talk more in detail about the upcoming meeting. Just before the meeting, we'll also have the core PCE price index just before that. Dive into that more in detail when time comes.
Okay, that's the time we have. Yohai, thank you as usual.
Thank you.
Okay, so for comments, suggestions, and questions, you're more than welcome to visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingenergy.com. We can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. And we want to thank you for listening. And till next time, this is Lior signing off for Yohai Ilam and saying goodbye and have an excellent week and trade responsibly.